seven stars that shine at 3:30 in the morning. Happy ending! She came from planet Claire. She came from planet Claire. She came from planet
the B-52s here on WBAI from the very first album. In fact, that's the very first song in the very first album called Planet Claire, preceded by The Buggles with Living in the Plastic Age, title track from that record, which I believe came out about the same time, early 80s, that general period, which is all kind of a dim haze right now in my mind. Well, 279-3400 is our telephone number, talking about high tech and the abuses therein, and all kinds of fun things like that. Speaking of the plastic age, though, I just wanted to digress, that's the word, for a moment over to elections. Well, first of all, did anyone catch the David Dinkins imitation that Rudy Giuliani pulled last night? Do you remember when David Dinkins won the primary over Ed Koch? How he was making a concession speech. No, he wasn't making a concession. He was making a conciliatory victory speech, if such a thing is possible. And he mentioned Ed Koch's name, and suddenly everybody started booing, and Dave Dinkins said, no, that's behind us now, we're friends now, we're together now, you know, something like that. Well, same thing happened last night with Rudy Giuliani when he was conceding to David Dinkins, and as soon as he mentioned David Dinkins' name, everybody started booing and hissing and things, and he did the same thing, you know, but it didn't quite work as well, you know. He stood up there and he said, no, you know, a few more times too. I don't want to exaggerate, but he did go on for quite a bit saying no. And the people, you know, wouldn't stop. They kept booing and hissing anyway. And Rudy got kind of upset, and he just said, "Yo, stop! Shut up!" You know, something to that effect. He just said, you know, "Hey," like a gym teacher. You know, when you keep talking in gym class, you know, they yell at that same tone of voice, and it was really funny. He would have made an interesting mayor. I'll give him that. He thinks he would have made a good mayor. I think he would have made an interesting mayor. And we can do with a little more interesting, a little less interesting things of that nature, I think. But, I did some research. Actually, before I get to this, why did I talk about the election? Okay, I was talking about the plastic age. Back where I live, out in Long Island, my county legislator is a guy named Steve Englebright, who has been instrumental in passing all kinds of landmark bills, such as the plastic bill, the anti-plastic bill, that is, that mandates that fast food places have to have biodegradable packaging. You know? Seems like a common sense kind of approach. But, of course, when you're dealing with big business, common sense goes right out the window. Profits come first. Let me tell you got to make money. That's what's important. Okay? That aside, Steve Englebright, the county legislator out there, has come up consistently with these environmental issues. Now, he's gotten a lot of organizations angry at him, you know, a lot of big businesses and things like that, you know. I mean, McDonald's and Burger King, they're not too happy about having to repackage everything because this guy came up with a law that, by the way, is being followed and, you know, it's the model for laws all over the country that are slowly popping into existence, where you know, people are saying, "Hey, we're tired of all this trash, this plastic stuff that lasts forever." You know, if it costs a little more, so be it. But we think the brunt should be borne by the companies that are making this crap, referring to what's inside the packages and the packages themselves. Now, in addition to that, of course, He's been instrumental in things like recycling, preserving the open land, which, if you're familiar with Long Island, there's less and less open land. Shopping centers are popping up everywhere. Houses are being developed. Wilderness is being destroyed. And it's a time of crisis for developers, because they're very worried about the wilderness, you know, because it seems to be fighting back a little bit, just a little bit, you know. People are saying, hey, you know, maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe we have too many houses and too many shopping centers and too many McDonald's. Maybe it's good to have a tree here and there, you know. That kind of talk can really make a developer sweat. And I think we should stop calling them developers, because they don't develop, they destroy. You know, they go into the forest and the fields, they say, hey, there's nothing here, tear it down, put some concrete up, you know? It's really pretty sick. And what's especially sad about it is Long Island is an island, you know? Every time you take away an acre, there's not another acre to go to. There's 1 acre less, and there's more people competing for that 1 acre less of green, and eventually there just won't be anything left unless more people like Steve Englebright pop up and continue to do what they've been doing. Now, why am I talking about him? Okay, well, he was running for re-election last night as county legislator, and driving back from New York last night, I was listening to all the radio news stations, you know, and they were giving all the election returns, you know, governor of Virginia and Washington State and Japan and wherever else, you know, but they weren't giving Suffolk County, which is where I live, you know, and I wanted to know, did this guy win, or did the Republican person that came out of nowhere and just started saying, well, Steve Englebright is responsible for all these high taxes, and that worked, you know, that got County Legislator Wayne Prospect. All right, who's the wise guy? Someone's beeping me. Okay, I'm going to put this thing in vibrating mode. There we go. All right, my beeper's in vibrating mode now. It can't be disturbed. Sorry about that, folks. High-tech intrudes again. But you have people like County Legislator Wayne Prospect and County Legislator Greg Blass, both environmentalists, both instrumental in the closing of the Shoreham nuclear power plant, but accused by their opponents in the primaries of being responsible for high taxes. Now, you say high taxes to somebody, and it provokes all these horrible responses, you know? Oh, screw the environment, I don't want to pay for it, you know? And even if it's not true, you know, and a lot of times it's not, if they just accuse someone of being high tax prone, that's enough. That in itself, it's kind of like a hysteria that takes over the voters. And that's what this Republican challenger was doing to Steve Englebright, to the environmentalist. And I knew if he was defeated somehow, the island was really in a lot of trouble, because losing Prospect, losing Blast, two really, you know, big environmentalists out there, who knows what's going to happen, you know? And I kept listening to the radio, you know, driving in the fog. It was really, really foggy last night. Not hearing anything. Not hearing... Well, my beeper's vibrating again. Not hearing a thing about the election out there. And how was I to know? How was I to know if, you know, if the news was good or the news was bad? And I didn't know until I got back to my little sleepy town at 5 in the morning, and I passed by one of his election signs, and draped across the election sign were the simple words, thank you. Thank you! Well, he wouldn't be thanking people if he lost, would he? He must have won. And he did, but not by much. Not by all that much at all. Which scares me. It really does. It scares me that people who are concerned more about profits and taxes before the environment are actually becoming a force again. I mean, face it, people. Just face it. The environment is the most important thing. No question about it. I mean, without the environment, there is nothing left. And if we ignore that, we might as well throw all the money out the window, because it's not going to do us any good. We've really screwed up the environment something fierce. We may not be able to fix it. There's an ozone hole over Antarctica. There's trash and litter and all kinds of toxic waste in the oceans. There's very little land left. Forests are being destroyed. You know, I really admire the animal activists. I don't always agree with them, but I admire them because they're out there and they're making it an issue. They're being very public and open about it, you know, and they're out there and you see them and you see their demonstrations. They make scenes. They're in the papers. Now, where are the environmentalists? I see Greenpeace every now and then, but where's the rest of it? You know, shouldn't we be having massive demonstrations? Shouldn't we be having people doing all kinds of things in support of the environment and against the people that are polluting it and that don't care about it? Shouldn't we be having sit-ins in politicians' offices and teach-ins and that kind of thing? I mean, this is about as important as it gets. It is a war. It's as important as a war because if we don't take care of it, we're all going to die. No question about it. So, keep an eye on the politicians. Keep an eye on the people in office because they're the ones that can do something about it. And if they're more concerned about monetary things and not concerned about preserving the environment, restoring the environment, let's get a new phrase in here. To hell with preserving. There's not much left to preserve. Let's start restoring what we have destroyed. When you find people like that, that care, make sure they stay in office. And that's my little sermon on elections, the importance of it. You know, a lot of people say to me that they don't feel like their vote matters. And to a degree, they're right, especially in the very big elections, you know, the nationwide things. Their vote really doesn't matter all that much, and the candidates really aren't all that different. You know, the major candidates, that is. And those are the only ones that ever get any attention in the media. But locally you do have a voice, because 100 votes makes a difference. So, keep that in mind. Keep that in mind, because we've got to keep the right people in the local office. They're the ones that can save the trees and save the grass and save all kinds of things like that. Well, enough serious business here. I have figured out a way to actually hack out the phone system here and get through to an AT&T operator, which has been made very difficult. Now, I'm sorry, but there are people calling on the unauthorized lines, and they're tying up the outgoing lines, and I just can't allow that. So I'm going to have to, unfortunately, pick up someone and then hang them up, and I don't like doing that. If someone wants to hang up on that line voluntarily, we can save you the embarrassment of actually being hung up upon here on WBAI, but I am going to have to do that. That's the only way I can get through. It's just one of these essential things. Okay, well, since no one has opted to do that, I'm afraid I must get violent and actually knock somebody off. There, I've done it. What, they're back? No, they're gone. Okay. One moment, please, while we... now they're back. This is ridiculous, folks. This is someone's got to hang up here, because I can't make an outgoing call unless I have a free line here. And someone seems to have given out all the secret numbers, and now there's... thank you. Thank you. Thank you, sir, or ma'am, or whatever that was. Now, let me try to make an outgoing call here. I'm going to get an AT&T operator, but I'll have to turn my microphone off in order to do it in the proper way.
Thank you.
Okay. We're on our way.
AT&T.
Hi, is this the AT&T operator? Oh, great. I'm trying to get through to a number here, and I'm having a lot of trouble. I was trying to make a collect call. My name is Emmanuel, and I don't understand what's happening at the other end. I'm getting some strange recording. I can't really make it out. Can you help me?
Where are you calling
from? Okay, it's to Dallas, Texas. It's area code 214, and the phone number is 951-1797. Thank you.
I'm sorry. The number you have called or the number you are calling from is not a working number.
Okay,
I don't understand what she means by that.
214-951-1797.
Yeah, she says the number I'm calling from isn't a working number. I mean, I never heard that phrase before.
AT&T Dallas.
Yes, operator. New York is calling. Would you please assist me ringing a number in Dallas?
Okay.
Okay, I have 214-951-1797. When we dial the number, apparently the recording comes back and tells us that we cannot reach the number because the number we're calling from is not a working number.
Okay, just a moment, operator.
Thank you. Hold on,
okay, I paid my bill. I don't know. Would that have anything to do with it?
No, because if you didn't pay your bill, you wouldn't have been able to get me.
Ah, okay. Actually, I had to go through quite a bit to get you in the first place.
I'm sorry. The number you have called or the number you are calling from is not a working number.
Operator?
Yes?
I'm getting that same thing. Evidently, I guess it's somebody hasn't paid their bill.
Well, it hasn't been me. I mean, I pay my bill every month.
Maybe it's the one that you're calling from.
No, it couldn't be. That couldn't be. Well, how would a recording in Dallas know that I haven't paid my bill? That doesn't seem to make sense, you know?
All kind of ways.
Is there some way that you can...
Evidently, the number, it must be the number that you're calling into.
Uh-huh. They haven't paid their bill.
And it's not going to go through if... They can't receive a call if the bill hasn't been paid.
I see. Well, I'm trying to think how I can tell them to pay their bill if I can't call them.
Okay, now this, are you sure of the number? Because this is Grand Prairie. It's not Dallas.
Well, I'm sure of the number. I don't know where the number is.
Okay, operator, all I can say is I'll report it.
Okay, thank you, operator.
You're welcome, bye-bye.
Okay, I appreciate that. Operator, I was having trouble with another number, too. I was wondering if you might be able to help me there. This one is in the Baltimore area. Okay.
What's the area code and the number?
Okay, it's area code 301, and the number is 725-9904. And again, I was getting a strange recording, and I was beginning to think it was just me. Now, there's no way I can put money in this phone. I know that.
Where are you getting these numbers from?
Well, I have them in front of me, but I've been having trouble calling these numbers for a while. But I figured, you know, I'd get them all together tonight and try to figure it all out.
Yes, operator. New York is calling. Could you please assist? Okay, never mind, operator. Excuse the call. Wrong one.
What happened?
That was the wrong operator.
Oh.
AT&T operator?
Yes, operator. New York is calling. Would you please assist me ringing a number? When I dial the number, a recording comes on and says deposit 25 cents, and my party is calling from a non-calling phone.
Okay.
Okay, it's 301-725-9904. 725? 725, yes. Oh, you got it to ring.
Ringing, yeah.
Thank you, operator.
Didn't it ring before the announcement?
No.
The call you made requires a 25 cent deposit.
Okay. Hold on.
Please hang up momentarily. This is for downtown. Deposit 25 cents and dial your call again.
Let me check something, operator. Hold on.
Thank you.
Your party calling a resident in Laurel, Maryland?
That's my impression.
Yes.
Okay. I'll have to report it, operator. I don't know what the trouble is.
Okay. Thank you, operator.
Okay, so I guess I reported those two numbers. Okay, well, I guess thank you very much for your help then.
You're welcome.
All right, have a good night.
You too.
All right. And this episode of Confuse the Operator was not sponsored by AT&T. You can rest assured of that. Our telephone number is area code 212-279-3400. And if you want to talk about anything high-tech related, well, now is your opportunity. Speak now or forever hold your peace, that kind of thing. Here at WBAI New York, Emmanuel Goldstein filling in for Sidney Smith until 3:30. Again, 212-279-3400. If you get a busy signal, just put yourself in redial mode, something like that. Okay, back to the phones. Also, there was an interesting piece in the New York Times about the new digital watches. Or actually, digital watches is kind of a weird term. It's not really the watch itself. It's the first wristwatchers with paging beepers. That's right, paging beepers attached to little wristwatches. I guess we should have expected this. They're expected to be introduced early next year. A significant advance in the miniaturization of complex radio communications technology. They say engineers have succeeded in putting the electronic circuitry of the pager on tiny silicon chips and in placing a highly sensitive antenna needed to pick up radio signals in the band of the watch. Current paging devices, which are considerably larger, in fact, I've got one right here, which was making noise before, are hooked to a belt or carried in a purse or a briefcase. Yes, or put anywhere, actually. I can put it right here on the table. That's what a beeper sounds like. Well, when you drop it, that's not what a beeper sounds like when it goes off. For more than a decade, engineers have been racing to develop a beeper small enough to fit inside an ordinary wristwatch. Now American Telephone and Electronics and Hattori Seiko plan to offer early next year a wristwatch pager that is expected to provide strong competition for manufacturers of existing paging equipment and providers of paging service. AT&E, interesting initials, has built a paging network that transmits messages to wristwatch pagers anywhere in the world. The messages are carried on FM radio subchannels at speeds substantially faster than those of current paging systems, which use standard radio waves and are mostly limited to local service areas. The AT&E Seiko Watch Pager, which will cost about $200, has a battery life of 1 year. Service rates are $8 a month for national paging and $35 a month for international paging, which I believe are cheaper than regular beeping services. As far as I know, anyway. So imagine that, having beepers on your watch now. I mean, you know, everyone's going to have one. Everyone will have a little beeper, and you'll be able to reach everybody at a moment's notice. Oh, it'll be wonderful until it becomes mandatory. And everyone must be accounted for at all moments. I mean, yeah, okay, call me paranoid. Call me someone that's infatuated with George Orwell's vision of the world. But, you know, keep in mind, technology is something that's going to spread all throughout the world, and not all countries all throughout the world have benevolent governments, and not all nice governments remain nice. Not all nice governments remain in power. But one thing that will remain is the technology once it becomes established. Imagine if the years just went in a different direction, you know, this century went the other way. It's 1989, next year is 1988, next year is 1987, etc., 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 until we get to the 1940s and the Nazis. And they have access to the things that we've developed here. Don't say it's not possible. It is something to consider. And that's why we have to be educated. 212-279-3400. Good evening.
Good evening. Emmanuel Goldstein?
Yes.
Okay, good. It's a pleasure to talk to you at this day of the week, because usually when I try to get on Robert Knight's air, but it is, of course, in the public trust. You're familiar with that term. My name is Monroe, and he has a kind of attitude towards me because I've been critical. Now, you use the term vent your spleen. What I do is not venting spleen. I think I have a spleen, and perhaps I have bile in it, and it's a biologically functioning part of my body, as Gary Noel probably explained. Hmm. Let me say it this way at the beginning, that I'm an original subscriber. I love the station, and I'm an intelligent person. You know, there is intelligence on this planet. You understand?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm sure I wouldn't horrify any extraterrestrial, because I think I could, work it all out with them. But the point is this, that I think you may have mentioned freedom of speech. And as an intelligent person on this planet, and somebody who loves the station, WBAI, and remembers that Lou Hill, who originated the idea, because, you know, radio began and it had experimentation and commercial people saw the virtues of it, and they figured, well, we'll put our Quaker Oats commercial on and all the people listening will hear it. Well, Lou Hill had the idea. You're familiar with Lou Hill's name?
Not really, no.
Well, he was, as a result of the Second World War, he was in our psychological area, trying to keep the troops happy. You know what I mean? After all, the war was a terrible ordeal. I was, I'm 58, so I was 7, 8, 9... attacking us, and all the other civilized parts of the world, and what did I know? And anyway, the point of it all was that I, at the age that I was aware of the war, was fearful that the Axis would win. I mean, can you imagine that? I mean, and then even when they were, we were going through Europe and so forth, and we had cleaned the fascists out of Africa, and so on, the point being, I was always fearful that their rockets would come over the United States. They had sent a couple of submarine saboteurs to Long Island. You mentioned Long Island.
Right.
Onto the beaches, and they were rounded up by the, police and the FBI and so forth. So, but the point is that I was even fearful that at last-ditch effort, Hitler and his people, the scientists, would use poison gas. And even in the United States, there was a German-American Bund. And they were favorable towards, this was a group of people who were favorable towards the Nazis. They were endorsing it. And then, of course, on WBAI, on Uncle Sam and the Swastika, it was shown that even Henry Ford liked many of the things that Hitler stood for. And that many of these multimillionaires were actually supporting Hitler's, move. For various reasons, naturally.
Well, I think...
Anyway, to get back to the story, I have subscribed to WBAI for 30 years, and in recent years, there's been an awful lot of freedom of speech talk on WBAI, and often there is freedom of speech, and as there is right now as I'm talking to you. But, however, various things have been happening recently, and you just mentioned George Orwell. Now, 1984 was read on WBAI, and in full, you know what I mean? Were you aware of that?
Yeah, I had heard before. I didn't hear it myself, but...
Well, it was very well done, and I wish it could be done again, rebroadcast, or excerpted even, because I even though people all know the name 1984, I mean, it's like, a password, there's something about that book, the idea that this individual didn't even know who to turn to. He didn't, the woman that appealed to him, he wasn't sure whether she was a spy or not, for the government. And as an individual...
If I could step in for a moment, sir. But what you are saying, and I wish we'd get this phone system fixed so it can be two-way, what you're saying is very, reminds me a lot of the hacker world where nobody trusts anybody else. Yes, it's exactly the same thing as with 1984. Computer hackers, they never know who is a Fed and who is not a Fed. And when you think about it, when you think about what it all means, it's just, you know, we just want information. We just want to know how something works. And that's being denied to us. And it's a sad state of affairs. I don't like cutting people off, but I'm afraid I want to try to move through these calls quickly, and there are a lot of calls here, and a lot of people have been waiting for a very long time. So the number is 279-3400. Good evening.
Hello.
Yes, can I help you?
Is this BAI?
Yes, it is. You're on the air.
Yes, I've been hungry for the taste of a Big Mac for quite some time now, and I was wondering if you could tell me what a Big Mac consists of?
Oh, you must have been listening earlier then when we actually...
I've been hungry for the taste of a Big Mac for quite some time now.
Actually, your voice sounds very familiar. This might be one of the people involved in that sketch. Ah, oh, yes. Well, insane people seem to be attracted to this place. Good evening. Good evening. Are you there?
Yeah. Just a response to the last caller. I mean, you gave him a lot less time than you did that guy who was going on and on 15 minutes with the telephone company. I think that was wrong. I guess that guy, you know, back around 1:15, that guy was like 20 minutes talking about all his little, you know, the phone company. I mean,
yeah, well, you know, it's hard because, you know, it's inherent in this phone system, but it's hard for us to interrupt people. We just have to, like, cut people off.
Yeah.
Or wait for a pause when they start talking, because for some reason I can't talk at the same time you're talking, and you won't be able to hear me, and since we're using a delay system, you won't be able to hear me on your radio for another 7 seconds. It's terrible. But that's irrelevant. What are you calling about?
I just mean, I thought it was like your bias, because he was picking up a phone company, and you like that, you hate the phone company. Anyway, okay, a couple things.
Well, I did like what he was saying, but, I mean, I'm perfectly happy to let somebody else say their piece, too.
All right, you seem a touch paranoid, though. I certainly agree with you about the danger of technology being in the hands of, you know, bad governments, but I can't put my finger on a couple things which did have a certain paranoid tinge to what you were saying. The thing about playing, let's confuse the operator. I don't know how you confused her, and it was like, I'm not sure what the whole point of that was. Maybe you can explain about that.
Well, now, if you've never heard such things before, first of all, we were able to see very clearly how different phone companies react to certain things. The company known as NTS that we found by accident, they don't handle confusing things themselves. They pass it on to another company, and they're just interested in charging you and making money. And they're really a rip-off organization. I have no problem saying that, because it's been proven. Lawsuits have been filed against them, and they've been told by federal commissions to stop doing what they're doing, which is charging huge amounts of money for the same calls that you would place on a regular phone company. Now, AT&T, you just noticed, went to all this this trouble to figure out what was going on with one of these phone numbers. Why is a phone number asking for money from a customer, a residential customer? We had operators from all over the country trying to figure this out. AT&T talked to an AT&T operator in Dallas and in Baltimore. And it's just it's kind of interesting how the whole network ties together. So it's a learning experience as well as a bit of fun.
Okay, it was somewhat fun. If you can give any information now that would help us beat the phone company, that would be great. I guess you're afraid to do that because you might get trouble yourself, right?
Well, I mean, the way you beat anything is just to be on top of things. Like, if you're not informed, you'll get ripped off, is basically the way it is. You have to know what a ripoff is when you see it. You have to know what payphones to avoid, because they charge you, you know, $500 to make a call back home.
All right, can you say a minute about these hackers who are afraid that other hackers are feds? Like, what's a hacker and what, you know, what are fed hackers?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Okay, well, a hacker, I mean, by my definition, and my definition is certainly not the definition of all time, a hacker is someone who is interested in finding out information, finding out how a particular computer or phone system works, and doesn't play by the rules in as much as he doesn't just read the material that he's supposed to read. He looks for additional information that the companies that put out this kind of system, the phone system, the computer systems, they don't want everybody to have this information because they want to keep certain things secret. They don't want it known that they're selling databases with your name on it to other companies and passing that around. They don't want you to know that credit reports are very easy to get a hold of.
Right.
Legitimately or illegitimately, the phone company doesn't want you to know that it's incredibly easy to look up your phone bill, whether you're that person or not. The phone company doesn't want you to know that it's incredibly easy to charge hundreds and hundreds of dollars of phone calls to your account, whether you're the right person or not. Hackers find out these things. Some hackers abuse them, some don't. Some are just interested in information, you know.
Why are they Fed hackers?
Well, Fed, well, I don't call them hackers. I just call them Feds. Feds are people that, you know, they're run by the federal government, obviously. They're either the Secret Service or the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Right.
And what they do is keep an eye on these hackers. Most of them are in their teens, although there are hackers of all ages. And they just, they watch them. They watch what they say on bulletin boards. Sometimes they monitor their phone lines.
Yeah.
Sometimes they watch them in person. They're all over the place, and they're very concerned. And obviously, the government and the big companies are very concerned when a group of people take knowledge into their own hands and don't play by the rules and find out things that they're not supposed to find out. Because a lot of what's going on would make the average person livid with rage when he finds out how his name and social security number and credit report is being bandied about from place to place.
Okay, I feel I've taken enough time. Let me say one last thing, okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay?
Go ahead.
Yeah, this last person I want you to know, his name is Monroe. He calls lots of shows, and this message I'm about to say, Monroe, is directed to you, who I know are listening. An example of what you just did in the last phone call is a perfect example of how you're not fair to the human race, and that you go off on 10,000 different digressions, and you show no respect, therefore, to the person who is hosting the show, because you don't focus your the digressions that may be very valid, and what you said about World War II was very interesting, and your restating of the stuff that came out on Uncle Sam and the Swastika was very important stuff. You nonetheless you disrespect the host by not focusing your question to their concerns, and I wish you'd see how it's inappropriate behavior for a humanistic fellow like yourself, and what I'm sure you think you are.
Okay, well, let's not try to have a war between listeners here, but we'll take that as constructive criticism.
Exactly, constructive criticism.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
And I guess I can't add anything to that. 212-279-3400 is our telephone number. Good evening.
Hello?
Yes?
Oh, all right. So I'm on the air. Yeah, I'm calling from Coney Island.
Okay.
The question is well, I guess, I don't know whether you can answer it, but this is a question. A phone call from one of the booths in Coney Island costs 45 cents, but from Manhattan to get to the same number costs 25 cents.
Okay, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is the payphone that you're using in Coney Island a New York telephone payphone?
That's interesting. I don't know.
Well, okay. Can you picture it in your mind?
IMAX, it should be a...
Can you picture this phone in your mind? Can you just sort of recreate it? Now, is there a little blue sticker in the upper left-hand corner, or is it an orange sticker, or is it not a sticker at all?
All right, let's see. I've tried about... Yeah, there's... let's see. Those telephones are in the subway station. You see.
At Coney Island.
Yeah.
They're in the subway station.
Yeah, they're in the subway.
Okay, those are New York telephone payphones. Then they wouldn't be anything else.
They couldn't be anything. And also, at another location on Fifth Avenue, the same thing happened. I just simply didn't understand the first time. It was about a year ago that I called Bell of New York, and they told me, well, this shouldn't happen. This shouldn't be the case. But now, again, about a month ago, about a week ago, and I called again the operator, and I guess the operator couldn't do anything or couldn't say much, but, I mean... Yeah, well...
Well, there's one thing I would suggest, and...
Is there a phone or somebody that I... I mean, over a few thousands of people, this... Yeah, okay.
Well, it's certainly a valid concern. It might be an error, it might not be, but either way, there is a way around it. If you get an account with another long-distance company, and, you know, it may not seem like you need a long-distance company for this, but I'll explain why. If you were to make this call using, say, MCI, Sprint, Western Union, just about any phone company,
You mean from here to Manhattan?
From here to Manhattan.
I mean,
from anywhere, from anywhere in New York to anywhere else in the, you know, in the general area. It would cost, the first minute would cost you probably something like about 17 cents. And since most phone calls, most phone calls locally don't last that long, you would actually be saving money. But it would certainly be less than 45 cents, and at night it goes down even further. So what you would do is you would call the toll-free number from the payphone, get the dial tone, enter your authorization code, and then the phone number, which is a bit of a pain, but there's no coins involved, and sometimes it can be a lot cheaper, and it works from just about everywhere.
But you mean with an account number?
You just need an account, but anybody can get one. You just call up the company, and there's no charge to get the account, you see. And that's one way around it.
Okay, my point, of course, is just a general thing. Okay, to get around it for personal use, it's okay. But, I mean, I don't know whether other people are doing it. And I've seen a lot of people here in Coney Island from the projects, from everywhere. They're using the payphones, and I guess it would be...
Well, you know, I'm not certain if it has to be that the rate going both ways has to be equal, but it sounds like it should be, and you know, sounds like a letter to the editor is in order, if nothing else. But contact your business office. Obviously, you can't contact them now because they're still out on strike, and you have to.
No. I was just listening to your program, and it focused on the telephone company.
Right.
And I had this question for a long, long time, and I didn't do anything about it because I don't use the phone too much.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a very good point, though.
I don't know
though.
Whether one should go ahead and sue them for whatever, you know, for, how do you call this?
For making too much money.
Yeah.
From people
I mean,
that...
I mean, why from Manhattan to Brooklyn, 25 cents, and from Brooklyn to Manhattan, 45 cents. I mean, I don't know.
That doesn't really make much sense, and I'll look into it a little bit more, you know, myself, because that doesn't sound like something that should be going on, and if it is going on, it should be well publicized.
It shouldn't be. I couldn't understand. I don't understand, and probably I'll try something else, but I don't know, for charging... I find this is a completely different point. I'm a foreigner. I come from Europe. I'm Greek, and I know that in Greece our telephone company is, I mean, I don't want to spoil your point, but I mean the telephone company in Greece is state owned, and they're pretty wild with their prices. They are about twice as much.
Oh, sure, yeah, and that's not all uncommon in Europe and other parts of the world.
I guess in Germany happens the same thing.
Well, the thing that a lot of people in other countries don't see the harm in is the fact that the post office and the phone company are owned by the government, run by the government, and, you know, it's been going on for all time, it's been going on, so people don't say, hey, you know, this is a threat to our freedom. If it happened here, obviously we would say this is not right. But since it's been going on there, people have gotten used to it, and it's become a given. So my point is that things change, and you become used to them. You got to watch what's happening. This has always been the case in Europe. It's not a healthy situation to have the government running the phone system because, you know, the phone system is a very vital link, and the mail is a very vital link. You don't want the government controlling that stuff, you know, unless it's an accredited totalitarian government that there's an understanding with the people that they're going to invade your privacy and violate your rights. Okay, fine. But if it's the case is, you know, something where it's halfway democratic, that is not a healthy situation. You know, an interesting thing in Paris. I was in Paris over the summer. I went to a payphone to make a local call. You know, this sounds like a New York telephone horror story, but it's worse because I wanted to make a local telephone call and I couldn't do it. You know why I couldn't do it? Because it didn't take coins. The payphone didn't take any coins, and I just had coins with me. I mean, I didn't have anything else besides coins. I figured that's what I needed to make a phone call. But no, in Paris, you need a phone card. You need this little card that you put in the phone, and it sort of subtracts numbers from the card. And That's how you make your phone calls. Now, I didn't have a card. I just got off the train. I didn't know where to get a card. It was late Sunday night. There was no place to go to get one of these cards. I couldn't make a phone call locally to find out where I had to go. I was lost, and I couldn't make any phone calls whatsoever. Finally, I did find one phone that did take quarters. Not quarters. What am I talking about? Took whatever coins. I was in so many countries, I've lost track of what they're called. But took French coins and allowed you to make a phone call, but I had to wait on a very long line to use it. And then early the next day, I got up, went down to the post office. Yes, the post office, run by the government, and went there to buy my phone card so I could make phone calls the French way and not have this problem again. And you think it would have a happy ending, wouldn't you? You would think that would solve all my problems, but they were out of phone cards. Yep, they didn't have any phone cards. I couldn't get a phone card. I couldn't make a phone call because I couldn't get a phone card because the government-run post office didn't have any more phone cards. Now, normally, I would consider the French to be very intelligent and, you know, well-versed in the ways of democracy. But damn it, you have a system where you take away the phone cards and the people can't make phone calls. You turn a phone call into a physical commodity that you can ration. Well, you can come up with the reasons later on, but the fact is you can actually ration phone calls. You can say, oh, well, you only have 100 units per day. Don't exceed that. And that's a very unhealthy thing to be doing. There's only one way to do it. And we can cut back on it any time we want. Boy, it was a scary situation. And, you know, the toll-free numbers, you know, the ones that didn't require the card, you couldn't make those without the card anyway, so you had to have a card just to make those calls. It's a bad situation. And, yeah, makes the system here very good in comparison. But that doesn't mean the system here is great. There's a lot that needs to be improved. And, you know, I was saying, wandering around Europe in Amsterdam, London, Paris, you know, the payphones here are terrible compared to the payphones in New York. And imagine my shame, my disgrace, when I came back to New York and tried to make calls on the payphones here, only to find that maybe one out of three, if I'm lucky, more like one out of four payphones are working. The rest give you weird, busy signals, high-pitched tones. Little shortcuts from the hole on the top to the hole on the bottom where the quarter slides through without even touching anything in between. All kinds of horrible things like that. Oh, mouthpieces that don't work. You know, you ever try talking to somebody without them hearing you? It's horrible. And then your quarter goes away after you hang up the phone. All because of companies that don't care enough to maintain the products, and because of companies that are out on strike and not doing much to resolve the matter. 279-3400 is our telephone number. This is Emmanuel Goldstein filling in for Sidney Smith. It's about 16 minutes to 3 o'clock in the morning, and boy, there's a lot of people up in New York. Here's one of them. Good evening.
Good evening, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
First of all, I've heard you here today. I was sitting here, you know, in a little anxiety. Listen, the station really needs a lot more comedy or humor. And I happen to write a lot of that stuff. It's not what they call straight comedy, it's humor. And I utilize rhyme, and I've been heard a lot on your station. I've done poems, limericks, of which I have hundreds and thousands of them. And I'm not widely known, I'm not out there. You know, I lived in New York a couple of years ago, lost my life.
Well, I agree with you. I think we need a bit more comedy on the radio station. You should...
I understand, but, you know, I'm handicapped.
Uh-huh.
Osteoporosis. You know what that condition is?
I explain it.
Yeah, the soft bone thing.
Right.
And you have to have milk, cheese, yogurt, and all that stuff to build you up. And I've been banging my head off here, calling and calling and getting the royal runaround from everyone. And I'm a veteran. I buried my mother last year. I was 5 years in an orphanage as a child in Far Rockaway, New York, called the Israel Orphan Asylum. And I just found out this week I'm in my 40s where my father is buried in Staten Island. And I think this world is really sick and hurting. We're all victims on this world, you know. And I'll tell you where comedy comes from, out of tragedy. And I have had more than my share of tragedy. I was denied not only a father, I was denied a brother and a sister. I was denied a beautiful family that was lost in the Holocaust. And I think there's something wrong with this world. There really is. Now, would you like a little humor tonight?
Yeah, I was about to ask you for some.
Comedy. See, most people's interpretation of comedy is, oh, you do comedy, you get up, you attack this and that, and you tear everything down. Now, I don't tear things down. Of course, I could if I wanted to, but I don't believe that's the right way to do it. I don't try to make enemies. I try to make friends. I try to bring people together. That should be the purpose of real comedy and humor. And I'll tell you, if the station presented more of this, not only would you have a bigger audience and listenership, people would support you. You've got to find a gimmick, and that's the gimmick. Humor. Never mind what they call regular comedy. Humor. H-U-M-O-R. Follow?
Yes, yes, I do.
I'll give you a little brief example.
Give me a brief example.
I do utilize rhyme, and then people think, oh, well, you're a poet. It's rhyming, that's all. What can I do? All right, here, I'll give you a brief example here. What do I think of computers in school? They're okay if you can get them to sit behind the desk.
That's a good one.
Deli in a tough part of New York. I ordered a lean corned beef. They brought me a mean corned beef. You see, I utilize rhyme in a sentence. I do it in the one-liners. I do it in couplets. And when I was doing it a couple of years ago, people looking at me as if I'm some kind of a jerk from another planet in another solar system.
Then you must be succeeding.
I'm not succeeding. I'm out here suffering and pain and hurting and taking mental, physical, emotional, and verbal abuse from everyone, including what's left of my so-called family.
Mm-hmm. Well,
And this world is like this. All right, how about limerick? I have over 8,000 limericks, and they're not even out there. I don't know when I'll get them out there with my condition. And I worry that something should happen to me, that my work will just go to the devil. You know, this is a terrible world. A lot of greater writers than me were either ripped off or victimized or done in.
I mean, you know, it sounds simplistic to say, you know, try to dwell on the positive, and I know that's not the easiest thing in the world to do, but
what I have.
That's the only way. You know, eventually some door is going to open.
The greatest things I've done are parodies, like Alan Sherman, Weird Al, any of great writers, Eddie Greensleeves, where you take something that exists, change the words around, and rhyme them in a different manner. And instead of being treasured and enjoyed, people are out to destroy you instead of enjoy you. You can't. How can you figure out?
Yeah, but you see, you're making a generalization. You're saying people are out to destroy you. Yes, some people are, but we can't say people are.
A thousand words. If you can make something rhyme in any manner,
right.
Certainly a gift. Is it not a gift, or is it some kind of a deviation from the normal? Okay, I'll give you a couple of brief examples here. Maybe I'll just, if I had chicken soup made by Jackie Mason, I'd dump it out into the hot dogs and sauerkraut. You see the rhyme there?
Ah.
Do you know how I do it?
Yeah.
I thought you would be very, very, hostile to what I do, because a lot of people are.
Well, you know,
understand,
why would you think I would be hostile?
I don't know, because so many have been.
Uh-huh.
When you have talent, well, why?
You see, you know, if you expect me to be hostile, I might sense that.
I wanted to try. I was sitting up here and I said, I'm going to take a shot for up to an hour. I'll wait and hold on. If I get on, I get on. If I don't, I don't. All right, I did get on. Now, all right.
I do have to give credit to not only you, but all of our listeners that call in and just leave the phone ringing and ringing and ringing in the hope that we'll get to them. I my hat off to you. I'm not wearing a hat, but if I was, I'd take it off now because that does take a lot of patience.
Emmanuel, these limericks are called the parlor trick of an intellectual. I don't know what the heck I am. I don't consider myself anything except just a poor victim of the world who was denied a lot of things in life, and I'm still going through a living hell here. You know? All right, how about this? There once was a savings and loan that wanted to create a clone. They loaned out all their dough to Fanny and Zoe, who stored it in the no-interest zone. You know what a limerick is?
Yeah, it's a...
No, this is rhyme. There is no such thing as fusion. The entire experiment is just an illusion. Getting energy from water is like selling your daughter. Let's put an end to all this confusion. Now, whatever it is, I don't know. Listen, you want to hear something exciting? On Labor Day, I saw one of these so-called chariots of fire, or UFOs, or flying saucers.
Uh-huh.
What is going on in the world these days? I'm looking for answers. I've got this book on the Kabbalah. I really don't know much, because I wasn't educated. But all my life, I've been searching for answers. And you know what happens when you're searching? You're open to any type of literature or propaganda that comes by. And, you know, everybody hands you something, like a lady who's well-stacked, so she hands you a religious tract. What is it supposed to do? There's got to be an answer somewhere, you know. You heard of the dancer who looked for an answer? She ended up with cancer. See how I do it? Liners. I'm pretty funny. I should be doing stand-up. How can I stand up without osteoporosis?
That's funny. I'm sorry. That's, you got a tragic sense of humor. I like that.
Tragic sense of humor. All right, have one or two little more short pieces and maybe...
Okay, then I got to go to another call. Give me one or two more.
Okay, all right. What is the theme song of Hurricane Hugo? I've got my eye on you.
Oh, boy. One more.
Somebody left their sex toy on St. Croix. You know what it is in the world? People don't know what love, friendship, or brotherhood is anymore. Because they're looking for something, right? So they think, they utilize sex as a common denominator to find love, friendship, or anything. And that's how the whole world is messed up. Look at your television every night. Shooting, killing, and what is this? Look at the movies. Same old garbage. No 3D movies. And I've been fighting for that for 5 years. I've made hundreds of dollars of phone calls, and it's one of the biggest cover-ups in Hollywood. Not only deaths of good writers, but the deaths of wonderful movie stars and others and songwriters. And
yeah.
I'm in the same category. Can you blame me for being somewhat paranoid like Sigmund Freud because of my...
Not at all. Not at all.
When is this going to end? You know, you look for a friend and you find a rear end. What is with this world? When are they going to wake up to reality? Is it because they have a small mentality? See, maybe at Getting On Tonight, there's an intelligent audience listening. They'll say, oh, I know who that guy is. He lived in New York a few years ago. We remember him. He used to run here and there, and he's writing his little couplets and rhymes. Maybe he's finally blossomed, you know?
What's your name again, sir?
Bill is the first name. That's all I'll tell you.
You're going to need a stage name.
I don't need a stage name because I'm not getting on a stage. The whole world is a cage, not a stage.
Ooh, okay.
Oh, I'm pretty brutal with the rhymes, can I be? But I don't want to be.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for calling and for hopefully spreading some cheer.
Take pity on Kitty, because she's back in the city, suffering from anxiety, neurosis, and halitosis. We must bring her some meatballs and Zitty. That's a good way to close, right?
That is a good way to close.
Yeah, that's how to close, and I'll blow my nose.
Okay, take care. 279-3400. There's a lot of interesting people out there. Good evening.
Hi, Emmanuel.
Hi, how are you?
Fascinating show tonight.
Thanks.
And Bill from Nutley, your last caller, is always a difficult act to follow.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to let him know that there are people who recognize him and appreciate him from radio stations big and small all over the New York area.
Yeah.
You were talking about the 9X strike before.
Certainly was.
And one thing I didn't hear you mention, you might have, but 9X has to be making a killing off of this strike.
Oh, yeah, I mentioned that at quite some length.
Because they're not only are they not paying most of their, or all of their unionized employees that are out on strike, they're also getting away without providing many of the services that are tariffed by the Public Service Commission.
Right, I was trying to prove that before, but apparently I failed because I think they started providing it again. But the verification, where if you get a busy signal, they see if somebody's on the line. I was getting for the longest time, sorry, we can't do that because of the strike. And unfortunately tonight they went ahead and did it, or at least started to do it before they hung up on me.
Well, a couple of things interesting about that, not about verification per se, but I know somebody who in New York was starting a new business, a new store in a new location. Can't get a phone.
Can't get a phone, right.
How can you do business in New York City if you can't get a new telephone?
And who's going to pay for all the lost business that this person has to put up with because New York Telephone and is being stubborn, you know?
Well, all of us are paying the same rates for the New York Telephone service that we're not getting.
Exactly.
I know of someone close to me who was a victim of a violent crime. And then this person started getting harassing phone calls relating to this violent crime. Person went down to her local police precinct, filed the appropriate complaints, aggravated harassment by telephone, and was told by a detective at the precinct to call the Annoyance Call Bureau and telephone security. Is failing to provide it. And they had the audacity to tell her when she was calling the Annoyance Call Bureau that she would have to get the detective from the precinct to call up the telephone security. But even if they did, since she was on a crossbar exchange due to the strike, they couldn't provide her with the information on tracing the incoming phone calls.
And if you ask them, they'll say, well, it's those workers. You know, those workers are sabotaging things, and they're just not listening to reason and things like that. But, you know, I don't care. You know, even if it is the workers, which I don't think it is in this case, but even if it is, it's not my problem. I'm the customer. You should be, moving your ass to get the system back to the normal state. And they don't care. They're not moving.
Well, these are all that we're talking about here, services that are tariffed by the Public Service Commission. As you mentioned before, I did hear you mention it is a monopoly, and there are supposed to be profit guidelines that are supposed to be imposed on monopoly services like this, public services. and they're making this money. And where is all of this? Where is all of this excess money going? If your line goes down, or if you need new telephone service, you can't get it. But meanwhile, these are tariffed, and the phone company isn't putting out any money to provide these services, and they blame it on the strike. I think if the Public Service Commission finally cracked down on the telephone company and said, look, you're going to have to, because this strike is going on, you're going to have to reduce everybody's phone bill by half, or whatever the appropriate amount of money it would take to rebate the amount of what constitutes over-profiteering charges during the last however many months this strike has been going on. I think you'd see that strike end real fast.
You sure would. You know what else? If everybody listening here would contact the Public Service Commission, I know their phone number is at the beginning of the phone book. Just open up the phone book.
800 number, even, I believe.
There's an 800 number, and just, you know, voice your outrage there, you know. And believe me, they will come down hard on New York Telephone when it becomes apparent that the people of New York are outraged by this. And that's the problem. It's the problem with anything. You've got to voice your outrage. You've got to voice your outrage that the environment is all screwed up. You've got to start, you know, saying these things loudly, insistently, repeatedly. And then they'll hear you, and then they'll do something. But if you just sit back and complain to your friends, you know, that's not going to do much.
Absolutely. That was one of the reasons why I called, was to urge people out there, anyone and everyone. It doesn't matter whether you've had a personal problem with the telephone system or know someone who has, that the telephone company is more than willing to blame on the strike. Whether or not you've had it, call the Public Service Commission and demand that the telephone company's excess profits and the money that they've stored up due to the strike be immediately reimbursed in forms of telephone rate reductions. We get these on Con Edison bills all the time, where if Con Edison buys cheap power from the State Power Authority, everyone in New York City gets between a couple of cents and a couple of dollars off their bill every month because
sure.
of that. And it should be applied to New York Telephone, and it hasn't been.
Now, and, you know, we definitely are entitled to some kind of a rebate from August on, but more importantly than getting a reduced rate, we want the full service
right.
back, because as you've demonstrated, it can actually risk somebody's life.
Yeah, and the telephone company does not care about that. I think that another thing that would stop this strike immediately would be for the Public Service Commission to leave 9X open to civil lawsuits from people whose businesses or life and property have been tangibly damaged due to 9X non-performance of their tariff duties by the company and blamed on the strike. You'd see the strike end real fast that way as well.
Yeah, you know, a strike that goes from August to November with no significant talks is inexcusable in any company. But a monopoly, it's something, you know, that's downright scary.
They want to bust the union the same way Continental and Texas Air tried to do, as you mentioned before as well.
Yeah.
Well, I know you've got a lot of other calls. I want to mention one thing quickly.
Go ahead.
Somebody brought up a long time ago about the AT&T earthquake service, as I call it.
Yeah.
I have family, as a matter of fact, my parents, who live about 5 miles north of Santa Cruz, which, of course, was the epicenter of the earthquake. They're just over the mountain from the fault line there. And that night, I remember very distinctly, a friend called me up and said, "Have you heard about the earthquake?" So immediately about, I guess it was 9 our time, I turned on the television. And I sat there for 3 hours watching the scenes of the fires in San Francisco, the Bay Bridge being down, and the Nimitz Freeway disaster. No communications in and out of Santa Cruz, despite the fact that I was trying by AT&T, which at the time, I emphasize that, was my primary service. And I tried MCI and Sprint, and of course everything was blocked. And later on in the night I heard, as you had mentioned, that AT&T had blocked the lines. So finally, about sometime after midnight, after having to take a stiff drink to calm myself down due to the worry about my family and not hearing any communications at all from out there, I had a friend who, much like yourself apparently, is very much into telephones, and I just told him, I said, look, give me every access code on equal access of every company. And I finally got through out there on several of the smaller companies. when I finally did, I found out that my family, fortunately, was okay. A lot of property damage, but nobody was hurt. And I was listening to some of the local stations in town rebroadcasting the local stations out there. AT&T here in New York, and I guess all over the country, was telling people not to try to call California. Let people in the earthquake region call out to you. Meanwhile, my entire family out there had absolutely no dial tone any place where they tried to dial out, but they could receive incoming phone calls.
Well, you know what they probably had? They probably had a condition known as slow dial tone, where it takes several minutes to get a dial tone because so many people are requesting one at the same time.
Well, here's the situation. The power plant out there, I'm not familiar with the name, in the Monterey Bay area, had been turned off because of fear of its operational safety. I'm not sure whether it's a nuclear plant or what it was, but the power was out there. So the story that I got from the rebroadcast of the local media out there was that the places that were widely affected, all the way from San Francisco south of Monterey, which is about a 100-mile stretch, had absolutely no power, and thus the outgoing capability of the exchanges was knocked off. So what you got were the local officials in San Francisco and more predominantly in the Monterey Bay area telling people to get someone specifically. I heard this being rebroadcast on Channel 4 in New York, which was broadcasting the local Channel 4 out there. They were telling people to get someone outside of the earthquake area to do the calling around for you, someone who did have a dial tone to make the long-distance calls in. Meanwhile, I have family in Sacramento, so I tried to call them. I could not even get through to Sacramento on any of the major carriers. And when I got to Sacramento, finally on one of the smaller carriers, to tell everybody there that the rest of my family in the earthquake area was all right, then what we ended up hearing was, well, AT&T has blocked off all of our service, too. So AT&T, specifically, caused me a night's worth of useless worry. There was a total lack of coordination and, in fact, 180-degree disparity between what the local residents were being told out there and what the rest of the country was being told by AT&T about how to use the phone.
I think what we have is a problem any time someone puts it into their head that they know what is best for everyone else. You know, I mean, that, you know, they may think they're doing the right thing, but a lot of people are going to think they're doing the wrong thing.
Well, let me make one more point, and
yeah,
then I'll let you go on to the other people who
okay
have been waiting as patiently as I have.
Go ahead.
The next day, I was, or 2 days after that, I was so angry looking back on that situation, I called up AT&T customer complaints. And I decided, as I've just told you, to give them a piece of my mind. Initially, the operator on the line was kind of not wanting to hear what I had to say and wanting to give me the company line. And aside from I want to echo the lauding in this particular situation of the divested long distance system, which was the only way that I managed to get through, I didn't want to hear this crap coming from an AT&T business representative, because I was angry and complaining about what I considered to be the grief that the company had caused me by its mismanagement in a crisis. And yes, like your other caller, I did see those commercials on that Nixon program, where AT&T was claiming about what good service they provided the Bay Area when they had nothing to do with service to the Bay Area, and they in fact shut off their service to the Bay Area. So I called, I was talking with this AT&T customer representative, and she was starting to give me the company line back. And I said, I don't want to hear the company line. And I said, listen, I'm calling to give you a technical complaint of the nature that I just described. And I said, if you're not going to hear me, if I'm going to hear one more word of company BS from you, I said, I will immediately change my long-distance primary affiliation to one of the companies that got me through in my time of need. The attitude of that operator changed 180 degrees on the spot.
Amazing.
And I'm sure that that would not have happened without divestiture.
No, because AT&T didn't have to worry about competition before. Now they do. Now we have a choice.
Right.
And that's very important.
And that choice can certainly be, I'm sure, if in some cases of the earthquake and probably a similar situation in the hurricane, providing that the lines weren't down of Hugo, that could literally be, in some cases, a matter of life and death. Because what would have happened, let's say, my parents living 4 miles from the fault line, right in the middle of a 7.1 earthquake, what would have happened if there had been multiple injuries there and nobody could have been able to call out and I hadn't been able to call in?
Indeed.
You could have ended up with deaths on that part, and again, much like with 9X not providing the service that they're tariffed for here and blaming it on the strike, it would have been because of the incompetence of a company handling in an emergency situation. And every time I see or hear a commercial about the intelligent network or AT&T, the one that gives you the best service, all I can do is raspberry now.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for bringing up these points because they're
very
relevant.
Okay, well, thank you for this fascinating show, and I hope that I hear more programming like this from WBAI.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Very much. Bye-bye.
And our telephone number is 279-3400. It's interesting. You know, I can understand why AT&T did that. I really can understand the motivation, but you gotta give people the final say, you know? I mean, yeah, AT&T can do what they want with their network, but you gotta give the people an alternative to their network. And there is an alternative to their network. There's lots of alternatives to using AT&T. But most people don't know that. There's no education. You know, and that's what's so sad about this, is the fact that there are options and a lot of people don't know about them. And, you know, it's, again, I can understand why they would want to cut off incoming calls to keep the lines open for outgoing calls. It makes sense, but in this day and age when you know, more phone calls can be transmitted over a single wire than ever before, you know, that becomes less and less of an issue. And with more and more phone companies doing the same thing, it's not an issue at all. So divestiture can be good for some things, and this certainly is one of them. Again, the other thing we're discussing tonight is the New York telephone strike, the 9X strike, and how that is affecting all of us, and how we should be educated on that, too, and we should be outraged, and calling our elected officials, calling the Public Service Commission. Don't bother calling New York telephone because they're not answering the phones. It's very important that we speak out, and Speak out loudly and repeatedly, because if we do that, the strike will end. We will get rebates, and this won't happen again. But we've got to do it. I mean, if everybody listening now were to open up their phone book, find that number for the Public Service Commission, and call it first thing tomorrow. I mean, it's a toll-free number, so, I mean, you know, what are you losing? You can call from a payphone, even. And just voice your outrage. Say you heard it here, and that you want something done about it, and you want them to get back to you. Make sure you say that. Make sure you want somebody to call you back. Because then they have to do something. Then they have to spend time on it. And when they spend time on thousands of people who are demanding calls back, then they'll start realizing it's an issue. And I think that's what we're proving here tonight, is that this is an issue. 279-3400. We'll be right back.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
You preach a man, don't tell me. Heaven is under the earth. You are dumpy and you don't know what life is really worth. Not all that glitter is gold, and half a story has never been told. So now we see the light, we gonna stand up for our rights. Come on,
get up, stand up.
Brothers, stand up for your rights.
Come on,
get up, stand up.
Sisters,
don't give up the fight.
I'm begging you.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up.
I said, don't give up the fight. Cause you know most people think a great God will come from the sky and take away every little thing and left everybody dry. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours right here on earth. And now we see the light. Stand up for a right. Come on,
get up, stand up.
Don't make them push you around.
Stand up for your rights.
Come on, brothers,
get up, stand up.
Be brave now, don't
give up the fight.
I say,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights.
Don't let them hold you down.
Get up, stand up.
Don't give up the fight. And tired of the game of technology, humbly asking Jesus for his mercy. We know and we understand, Almighty Jah is a living man. You fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. And now we see the light, we gotta stand up for all right.
Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights.
Come on, our brothers,
get up, stand up.
I said, don't give up the fight.
Don't let them push you.
I say,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights.
It's a minor thing, you might say. It's a small thing in the face of what's going on in the rest of the world. You know, people fighting and dying in the streets, and we're here complaining about telephones. Well, it's the little things. And it's not a little thing. I mean, it's a basic human commodity here. But it's, you know, it's a basic part of our lives. And we have to make sure that certain things are run the way that we want them, because we're the ones that are in charge of them. As we are in charge of every aspect of our lives, or we certainly should be. It's up to us to keep it that way. So that's basically what we're saying here tonight. And you know, I could see a telephone rep saying, "Here are all these people complaining about the phone company, and they're all using telephones and calling into the radio station and complaining on the telephones. The telephones are working. Why are they complaining about something as they're using it to complain, you know?" And the fact of the matter is, you know, most of the phone system is completely automated. You don't need human intervention to make a simple phone call. But it's those human intervention things where you need an operator. You need a phone number. You need repair, you need credit, you need a phone, a payphone fixed or something like that. Those things are very important, and they're especially important in a crisis situation, or it's just someone who's handicapped or confined for one reason or another. And those are the people that are suffering more than anyone else. You might not be suffering at all. You might not even notice the strike. But there are a lot of people that are noticing the strike. A lot of people who want a phone that can't get one. A lot of businesses that can't operate without a telephone. It's living hell. And we can't ignore the inconvenience, the suffering. I mean, it may sound kind of silly to say people are suffering because of this, but it is true. It's a, you know, it's a kind of a not very high form of suffering, but it is, it's one of those little things that just sort of builds up inside you. It's one of those little inconveniences, you know, like, you know, in 1984, the lift never working going up to whatever floor Winston Smith lived on, you know, the lift never worked, so he'd always take the stairs. There was never any hot water, never any sharp razor blades, just one more little inconvenience after another. It just turns you into a very embittered person. And we don't need bitterness. We don't need that, because that doesn't get us anything. We need to be looking forward, looking upward, being positive. And no, I'm not being religious, so don't even think of it. It's something that is a very basic need and needs to be filled, needs to be renewed. So we must call upon the phone company to end this nonsense right away and get back to the business of being a phone company. Speaking of phones, some timely telephone tips that we pulled out of a Defense Department manual, of all things. I thought you might find some of these interesting, and we'll go back to the phone calls right after we take a look at those. When you receive a telephone call, always remember to answer as promptly as possible. Try to answer before the second ring. Identify yourself when answering. Mr. Brown's office, Miss Andrews, or personnel, Mason. Huh? Catchy, eh? Speak distinctly and pleasantly. Hold mouthpiece well up in front of lips. Avoid trite or abrupt phrases, such as, who's calling? Just a moment. He's busy. He's in conference. He's tied up. He isn't in. Hello? No, that last one was me, I'm sorry. Volunteer the whereabouts and whenabouts of an absent person. He can be reached in Mr. Jones's office, extension 2094. He is out of the building until 3 o'clock. May I locate him and ask him to call you? Volunteer your own assistance. Is there something I could do? Could I help you? Or anyone else? Would you like to come upstairs? Sorry, that was me again. Request identity of caller only when necessary and in a tactful manner. May I have your name? May I ask who this is, please? Okay. Explain off-the-line delays. It's in the files. Can you wait a moment? Take messages willingly. Write essential details on a suitable message form. Deliver promptly. Transfer elsewhere only when you know definitely the correct person or number. Give caller these facts before transferring. Again, Defense Department phone tips. When you make a telephone call, always remember to plan an effective conversation. And I guess we can pass this along to all of the people waiting on the phone lines here, okay? Have you planned an effective conversation? I hope so. Get your thoughts in order before calling. Place the call yourself, except in special circumstances. Make sure you are on the line, ready to talk when the called person is reached. Have the correct number or extension in mind. Consult your directory or personal number list. Listen for dial tone. Dial carefully. See general information page in your directory. Identify yourself immediately to the first person answering the call telephone. This is Mr. Johnson. May I speak to Mr. Hodges, please? Identify also, when helpful, your office and purpose in calling. Mr. Brown in accounts, returning Mr. Green's call. Ask whether called person has time to talk now, if call is likely to be lengthy. Try to complete your business on one call by securing information or leaving a message. Volunteer your extension and the best time to reach you in case you request a callback. And finally, keep your conversation brief and businesslike. And those telephone tips were brought to you by the Defense Department, straight out of their phone book. Yes. Our telephone number is 279-3400. This is Emmanuel Goldstein, and I'll be here until 3:30, which is just about 11 minutes away. I can't believe it's so late. And it's so nasty outside, too. Wet and slippery and all that kind of thing. But we're here talking about the phone company, talking about not just the phone company. We're talking about high tech and abuses of high tech, people monitoring, listening, and all kinds of ways the system can be used against you, but also ways in which you can use the system for yourself. And that's kind of the whole idea of being a hacker, which is what I proudly claim to be. 279-3400, area code 212. Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Okay. Mike Fader has been banned from WBAI for a month because he mentioned certain people on the station and said what he felt that, you know, they were being unfair. Now, my point is this. WBAI is supposedly a freedom of speech station. It is like the cornerstone of the whole idea that Lou Hill had, that people could discuss.
Okay, sir, enough Lou Hill for one night. I'm sorry. Good evening. Good morning, I mean. Hello, turn on your radio. Okay, well, it's nice to hear my voice on the radio in someone else's house, but it's just not nice enough to keep going with. Good morning.
Hello, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
Okay, interesting show tonight.
Thank you.
I recently was victimized, actually not successfully by the victimizers, but I got a phone call that really irritated me. It was about 9 in the evening, and I picked up the phone, and there was a young woman, and it was like I had walked onto the set of Wheel of Fortune or something. She's saying, "You've just won an all-expenses trip paid to the Bahamas." So I said, "Right, likely." You know, I said to myself, "Right, likely story." But she was really into trying to rev me up. She's calling me by my first name and saying, "Now, who are you going to take with you on your trip?" So I said, "Now, come on, you know you're going to sell me magazines, right?" She said, "Oh no, we would never think of selling you magazines.
I have something bigger in store, right?"
Absolutely. It was amazing the way this thing panned out. So I thought I'd test, try and create kind of a cusp point in her life, make her realize what kind of outfit she was involved with. I said to her, "Are you willing to vow that you will go to hell for eternity if you are actually trying to sell me something or rip me off in some way?" And she said, "Oh, sure."
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Something like that. So, she said, "Now, are you excited about your all-expenses-paid trip to the Bahamas?" I said, "Well, mildly. When will written notification of this award be received?" She said, "Well, that'll come in a few days. Since you're so excited about your new trip, I'll hand you over to Mr. Johnson or whatever. Maybe he's the same guy from the Army." But anyway, so then this guy starts, "Are you excited? Who are you going to take with you on your trip?" And then finally they get to the payoff, which is, "Now, in order to verify that you are the winner, all I need is your MasterCard number."
Oh, beautiful.
Can you believe that?
And I hope you supplied it with a cheer in your voice, did you?
What I said at that point was...
Well, you're one of these un-American suspicious people that that doesn't believe in all this, free passing of MasterCard numbers.
I think I played it straight a little bit longer. I said, "Now, why would you need my MasterCard number? You're free to give me anything you like, but you don't need my MasterCard number to give me vacation." "No, we just needed to ensure your spot." And I said to him at that point, "Well, I sometimes wonder how people like you can lie so bold-facedly." At that point, he said, "I don't like your attitude. I think we're going to have to give this vacation to someone else."
Well, why didn't you just say, "I don't have a MasterCard," and see what he would have said then?
I don't know. I think I had kind of had my fill. I mean,
yeah.
At that point, I just wanted to get a shot. Well,
I've won about 20 of those free vacations in the last 2 years, and invariably what the deal is, they charge you a verification fee, and you have to pay some sort of a custom tax and all kinds of things like that. And in the end, you pay several hundred dollars, and you have to provide your own transportation to the very tip of Florida to get to the Bahamas from that very tip of Florida. You have to get down there yourself. And then, you stay in this rat shack for a couple of days, and, you don't really get much out of that at all. I mean, you're better off going down to Bahamas and pitching a tent. that's a free vacation too, isn't it?
Well, I suppose so. Let me see, try and hit the highlights of what else I had on my mind here. There is a concept among some people, even some remarkably intelligent people, that technology is something passive, and that it's not the technology, it's what you do with it. And one of the great challengers of this idea was Marshall McLuhan. Now, it's dangerous to even mention Marshall McLuhan, especially since Woody Allen did such a great satire on people who go around talking about McLuhan. I don't know if you know that or not.
What was that called?
It was a scene in Annie Hall in which there's some guy...
Oh, yes, yes.
And Woody Allen says, "Well, gee, I wish I had a sock filled with horse manure. Even better yet, I wish I had Marshall McLuhan here." And then he pulls out the real Marshall McLuhan, who comes over to this guy and tells him he knows nothing about his philosophy. But
wouldn't it be great if life were like that?
I think that's exactly what Woody Allen said. You've obviously seen the film. In any event, however, one of the important things you have to understand about technology is that it is not passive. It actively transforms the people who use it. Not to say something like this. For example, Jim Freund, an excellent AI producer who works with computers and also does a science fiction show, has on many occasions stated how ridiculous the idea of computers taking over is, which is, of course, the thesis of many cheap science fiction plots. But the fact of the matter is that the real danger is that people will give machines control over many things in order to avoid having to deal with those things and in order to avoid having to make decisions. And that's how technocracy comes about.
Uh-huh.
It's not a computer gone mad taking over the society. It's people wanting to abrogate their own responsibilities and give them to machines.
Yes, so in a sense, I mean, the idea of computers taking over is a very simplistic thing, but they can take over in a much more subtle way.
Exactly.
And that's what I think we're moving towards, yeah.
Exactly. And I wanted to mention there are two fairly interesting videotapes that people with access to a video machine can rent, both on the themes of the way that technology can transform people, especially surveillance technology. One of them is a fascinating film by Francis Ford Coppola called The Conversation, starring Gene Hackman. It's about a professional professional surveillance expert, and it's a personality study and a study of the way that surveillance has extensive scenes at a wiretappers convention and various explorations of the psychological aspects of the way that people relate to this technology of parabolic microphones and so forth.
Uh-huh.
There's also, you can also rent a videotape of an old science fiction show called The Outer Limits, and there's an episode called OBIT, O-B-I-T, which is about a Senate investigation of disaster at a military installation where people have begun committing suicide and having nervous breakdowns. And it turns out that an alien has introduced a machine which allows people to perform complete surveillance on anyone as long as they know their whereabouts.
You mean their thoughts, too?
Not their thoughts, just all of their actions.
Okay.
And ultimately, it turns out that the purpose of this on the part of the alien civilization is to bring people to a point where they are obsessed with spying on each other to the point that they become actually addicted to it. I think the most significant aspect of the denouement of this is that the aliens believe that this surveillance is actually like a drug to which people become habituated, and that they then lose an active interest in life and simply become obsessed with spying on each other and finding out what each other are doing.
That's not an unrealistic way of looking at it. It's not something that I wouldn't doubt. I mean, that could definitely be the case.
I have one final comment. It's actually
make it very quick because we're running out of time here.
Okay. Do you know anything about the NSA and whether they do actually have some of the telephone surveillance capabilities which some paranoid leftists?
Well, supposedly they have the capability of recognizing words and transatlantic conversations. If you say a certain word like bomb, terrorist, that kind of thing, it triggers a machine or something like that. I don't know. I'd like to know more about that. And if someone has information, please send it here. I'd like to ask you one more question before we say goodnight, sir.
Sure.
Have you ever heard the term technorat?
No, I haven't.
Well, you mentioned the word technocrat before, and I figured you might like to know that phrase, technorat. It's sort of analogous to hacking, computer hackers, because, you know, a rat, what is a rat? A rat is the most vile creature you can think of, always getting into things that it's not supposed to get into, and, you know, completely jumping into disgusting things, and very intelligent, too, you know? It's sort of the way that hackers are looked upon.
I'm not quite a hacker myself, though I do have certain inclinations, but I prefer not to choose the rodent as my role model, especially last year I've had some slight skirmishes with them in my apartment.
Uh-huh. Well, try to look at it from their point of view next time. But thanks for calling.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Okay, and that's going to just about do it for us. I want to thank everybody who called in and say sorry to all those people that we didn't get to. There's a whole line of them there, but that's just the way things go. My name is Emmanuel Goldstein. I've been filling in for both Robert Knight and Sidney Smith tonight. It's been fun doing a doubleheader, and hopefully we'll do it again sometime soon. Hopefully that strike will end. Let's hope so, okay? And call up your Public Service Commission and all those other nice people and let them know how you really think. Okay, we'll see you soon. Good night.
Lord help you with the great new power. Lord, to you is the good of all mankind. Some people want to use it for everything. But God can be like that.
atomic telephone.
Oh, then
no man knows the power.
Oh,
only God alone.
Oh, then
it can cure the sick or destroy the evil. With one sweep of power known by God alone.
Oh, God is not too busy to know the sins of man. You may hear from heaven, you may feel his hand. If you are in trouble and afraid of all mankind, hey,
pick up the atomic telephone and get him on the line.
Hey,
I got to talk to Jesus
on the atomic
telephone.
All of them,
no man knows his power.
Oh,
only God alone.
Oh, all in
it can cure the sick or destroy the evil. With one sweep of power known by God alone.
Oh, for this call to heaven, there will be no choice. Just like old man Noah, who prayed from an ark, you can ask your God just what to do. He'll lead you from the wilderness and out of the dark. Hey, I got to talk to Jesus
on the atomic.
Well, Emmanuel Zoff with the Memphis Spirits of Memphis Quartet heading down to the Atomic Cafe, and I guess you can call him another time on the Atomic Telephone. Another time, he'll pop up, I'm sure, again here on WBAI in New York, but now stay tuned for Out of the Shadows.
You